right, good morning to you. You know, I don't know about you, but this isn't a water day for me. I need a hot coffee, so here. Hey, nice to have you here today. Hey, I need something from you as we get started today. And really what I need is your encouragement, okay? And I just want to get something out of the way here before somebody brings it up. I got up, as always, on Sunday morning, had a really nice morning at home, you know, and nice hot cup of coffee. I left the house a little bit before 6 to go and meet with my brothers and sisters to pray as a community for our day. And we had a wonderful time of prayer from 6:30 to 7. And after we finished, one of my fellow pastors there, he said to me, he said, "Pastor John," he said, "my wife would never let me leave the house wearing that." I said, "Oh, really?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "Man, you got stripes going on everywhere there, okay?" You know, I give Arlene a kiss this morning in the dark as I left. She was still sleeping. So I'm really hoping that she doesn't come to church here any minute now and, like, chastise me for what I'm wearing. You know, I don't know. I didn't know this was against the rules anymore. Okay, yeah, thank you, TJ. You know, you wear it, brother. I'm here. You know, I live too far away now to go change, so I'm just here. So if you have a hard time listening this morning because of my attire, I apologize right up front. But, you know, we'll try to get through this. It really happened, you know. So we'll see what Arlene says when she gets here. Don't say anything to her. I want to see what she says when she comes in. Hey, today we're actually finishing up with our study in Proverbs entitled The Path. Remember, we talked about how our direction determines our destination, how life is a series of mid-course corrections along the way, how we should trust our hearts, but how we should trust our hearts to God. We talked about a lot of things. And today, you know, last week we talked about how our attention determines direction. But today we're going to be looking at this idea about how we deal with unreachable destinations. You know, it's happened for everybody. You're on the road, you're on the path, you got goals ahead of you, and all of a sudden you realize, you know what, I'm not going to get there. When I was in high school, I remember, you probably heard me tell you that, you know, I had this goal. I wanted to play college football. I didn't care where. I just wanted to play college football somewhere. But the last couple of years in high school, you know, I dealt with a couple of really bad knee injuries, and to the point now that, you know, as a 59-year-old male, I wish I'd never played, you know. But back then, I wanted to do that. But you know what? There came a time. And there comes a time for all of us when we're there on the road and we realize, you know what? I'm not going to get this. I'm not going to achieve this. I'm not going to get there. I'm not going to become this. I'm not going to obtain this. And what do we do then? Andy Stanley has an extended quote in his book that we've been looking at that's really interesting. Listen to what he says. He says, "Some destinations are unreachable. Some dreams won't come true. Some dreams can't come true. Some destinations become unreachable because of lifestyle choices. Some are unreachable because of a single decision. Some destinations are out of reach because of mistakes that we've made or others have made in our place. Some are out of reach because of decisions others have made. Sometimes we're to blame. Sometimes there's no one to blame. But in time, the reason behind our inability to get where we want to becomes irrelevant. We are where we are. We aren't where we want to be. And there is nothing that can be done to change that." You know, I believe with all my heart that we all reach that kind of point at some time in our lives. And time, think about it. Time is many times the culprit. Did you ever hear Vince Lombardi, the great Green Bay Packer coach? He said, quote, "We didn't lose. We just ran out of time." And perhaps with unlimited time, we can make more of our dreams come true, but we can't stop the clock. We might be able to reach any destination we choose, but many times there's things before us that we will never achieve. But there aren't any timeouts in life, he says. You know, here's the thing. Our text for today comes from Proverbs chapter 12, or chapter 13, verse 12, and here's the proverb. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a dream fulfilled is a tree of life. You know, when I first read that, I had those words in my mind. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. I'm thinking, what exactly is that? You know, one of the things I like to do in my study, and I would encourage you to do this in your study, when you read a passage of Scripture, you're like, exactly what does that mean? What a real good thing to do is to go to read it. Go and read it in like 10, 12 different translations. In other words, here's this in the Message Bible, which I think is very good. He says, unrelenting disappointment leaves you heart sick, but a sudden good break can turn life around. Now look at the New Living Translation again in this. Hope deferred. And when you read this out of the Message and it says how we have this here, this unachieved, this unattainable thing that is before us, you know, it kind of makes more sense, doesn't it? I mean, when you realize that your dream isn't going to happen, what happens? He says here that your heart gets sick. It's a natural first reaction. So let me ask you a really important question. What do you do when you can't reach your destination? It happens to all of us. It happens to us vocationally when things don't turn out the way we hope that they will. It happens to us physically when we have come upon us some sickness or disease that we did not expect, did not want, and we prayed for deliverance from. And we realize that the road that is before us is different than the one that we want simply because of these unrealized dreams that happen in life. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. What do you do when that happens? Well, let me show you a list here that I've made. And I think it's a great list. And I want to talk about each of these things individually for just a few moments. You get heart sick. You ever notice that when you get heart sick, when you get down because of an unrealized dream, you either get bitter or you get better. You either wallow in it and get bitter, or you work at it and get better. Think about it. As a 17-year-old, Joseph had all the dreams in the world. He had this dream that one day that he would rule over his fathers and his brothers, and he found himself in slavery, and then he found himself being sold, and he found himself imprisoned. You think he was ever heartsick? Sure he was. Daniel, at the very same age, found himself chained to other young Israelites, dragged hundreds of miles into exile into a foreign country. You think his heart ever got sick? Sure it did. But he had to choose whether or not he wanted to remain bitter or he wanted to get better. King David got word one day that his newborn son was going to die. And how was he going to deal with it? Everybody thought, you know what, man, this is going to be a bitter pill for him to swallow. But we have to choose whether or not we want to remain bitter or we want to work at it and get better. The Apostle Paul found himself with a physical disease. He called it his thorn in the flesh. Now, we don't know exactly what it was, whether it was a handicap, something that severely limited him, some people say that it is poor eyesight or other things, but what we know is that he despaired over it. He was heartsick over it. He prayed that God would relieve him of it. And then, of course, there's Jesus. Bible tells us on the night night before he died, he found himself in the garden and he prayed, Father, if there's any way that this cup can pass from me, but not my will, but your will be done. What do you do when you're heartsick? How do you avoid bitterness and choose to get better? Andy Stanley says this. He says, what do you do when your dreams don't come true? You can either get angry with God, you can be angry with life, you can despair, you can try to make something happen anyway, you can try to live your dream through your kids. I've seen it plenty of times, he says, but at the end of your striving and manipulating, nothing will have changed with you. you will be just as far away from whatever it is that you desired. But now you're also far away from God. Hear from the Apostle Paul. He says in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7, to keep me from becoming conceited because of these surpassing great revelations, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan, to torment me. Three times I pleaded that the Lord would take it away from me. Paul had this amazing things happen to him in his life. So many highs, so many lows. But now we see him here. He's in the lowest of lows. His dream is not realized. His desire does not come. And what does he do? Is he heartsick? Sure. Does he stay there? No. So what we do, we can go to this second thing. Paul did, and we can pray very, very fervently. Fervently is just a nice Christian word to mean really seriously, with passion, and with great joy even. Paul prayed fervently, it says, three times. But look at 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9. But he said to me, in other words, after he prayed, he said to me, Jesus said to him, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Isn't that amazing? You see, that's what we can do. I mean, yes, we become heartsick when we don't realize our dreams, but we can stay in that bitterness, or we can desire to become better. How do we become better? We become better by praying very fervently and learning from God that his grace is sufficient even though you're in this time and this place of weakness. Here, let me give you an example. I think I've told you in some ways before, my son-in-law, Mark, who is the husband of my oldest daughter, Sarah, they live in Pittsburgh, and Mark's a great guy. But I knew he was from Florida, but when he married Sarah and he was around me to the point that he understood my passion for the University of Tennessee, all of a sudden he became a Gator fan. And his goal in life was just to torment me. You know, he sent me a picture several months ago of a lawnmower. It was orange and white, and it said the Vols on this lawnmower. And the caption said, it doesn't mow. It just talks about how it's going to mow next year. Now, you can imagine how that gets under my craw. But worse than that, he dresses my grandchildren in gator gear and just drives me bonkers. And they'll send us pictures, and I'm just like complaining, and Arlene says, oh, John, honey, it's not a big deal. I said, it's a big deal. Would it be a big deal if they started worshiping the devil? It's almost the same thing. You know, I don't even think he could tell you who the coach of the University of Florida was, but he loves to torment me. You see, that's the way life is. See, I had to learn that my response had to be different because, you know, when I like gave it back to him, that was like just throwing gasoline on the fire. You know, sometimes when life gives you a sick heart, let's not respond with bitterness. Let's respond with fervent prayer, asking God to show us that his grace can be sufficient even though we don't achieve what we want in life. You see, because that gets us to the point where we can hear God's voice. In the midst of prayer, it is possible to hear God's voice. Don't allow your prayers to only be you telling God what you want, need, or desire. A lot of times our prayers need to be spoken in silence, so God can speak to us. Did you notice that? In the midst of Paul's prayer, it says that he learned that Jesus said to him, my grace is sufficient. What does God need to say to you? What do you need to hear from him? Because if we're the ones that's always doing the talking, we will not hear his voice. And listen, folks, if the voice of God can do anything, it can bring change. It can bring a sense of understanding about life. It may come to the point where we understand this is going to stay with me, but God's going to help me find a bad, through this bad situation, something good. Romans 8:28, we know that all things work to good for those who love Him. Not that all things are good, but all things can work for good. Paul found a way to believe that God's grace was sufficient for him, that God's power would be even better displayed in his weakness and in his physical infirmity. It's amazing to me that Paul could find himself in prison and not complain about being jailed for no reason, but he would say things like, and he says this in his prison epistles, I'm here so that the gospel can be furthered in these people. You see, folks, I have a hard time. I tell you what, I need to learn this. You need to learn this. God, when I get into a situation where my dreams are unrealized, don't let me just focus on what I'm not achieving, what I'm not getting, what I'm not having in my life. Help me to see something good that can come out of this. God, let me hear your voice. Jesus said, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness. It's not just about our difficulty, the things that we've not achieved, but it's about what God wants to have happen through it all. It's not just about you. You know what? God taught me this a couple of years ago in a great way because, you know, we all are selfish in so many ways. I'd gone to the doctor and I was having to get some blood work done. And, you know, they come in and ask me, are you allergic to anything? I said, yes, anything sharp. I'm allergic to anything that you want to put in my arm. I'm allergic to drops of red stuff dripping on the floor, okay? And I just have this thing about giving blood. And Arlene says, honey, it doesn't hurt. I said, I know it doesn't hurt. It's not about pain. It's just about something psychological with me. I'm just weird like that. And I was there, and this nice lady came in to take my blood, and I don't have any problem doing that, you know, after all these years. And she came in. She had this nice young lady with her who was a student, and she said, you know, John, this is so-and-so, and she's a student, and would you mind if she drew your blood today? She's learning. And you know what? For the life of me, I could not do what God wanted me to do. I said no. She can practice on somebody else, not on me. I want the most experienced person here taking my blood, no one else. Thank you very much. God bless you, young lady. Okay? And I didn't let her do it. Why are we like that? Now I know, you know, that's kind of silly as I look back. That really happened. Why are we like that? Why is it always about what we need, what we want, about our pain? You see, Paul had this ability to say, listen, you know, we're on this road. I see what's happening. And it is so interesting to think that hope deferred makes your heart sick. But what do we do when our heart gets sick? Well, here's what we need to do. We need to pray fervently. We need to listen for God's word. We need to find the good in it. Maybe sometimes the good in it is just actually helping somebody else. Paul continues, he says, therefore, in 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7, therefore I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulty. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Isn't that amazing? That's amazing that Paul could feel that way and understand that. And that is so very important. I'm going to boast not, you know, Paul at a point in time boasted about all of his achievements, who he was, his tribe, his education, his place in life. And then when he found Christ, all that became rubbish. And he realized that even in his weakness, when he's in prison, God can use him. When he's weak, he can be strong. When he has this thorn in the flesh that he prays desperately to be rid of, that God said, no, you're going to have to carry that. That's going to be an unrealized dream in your life. But that's okay, because in your weakness, I can make you strong. Because you see, he got to the point where he could use it for the glory of God. whatever Paul had, he was determined to use it for the glory of God. When Jesus was facing his darkest moment, wrestling in the Garden of Gethsemane with this unreachable destination that he had before him, that he wholly desired, but it wasn't going to happen, he was able to pray, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." The second time he prayed, not having to face this inevitable hardship, his prayer changed slightly. "My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done." He accepted reality. Can we do that? I mean, with faith and joy and with assurance, can we accept reality? I mean, looking down the road, looking down the path that we're traveling, understand, you know, there's things that I want that I'm not going to get. And that's okay. There's things that I need as far as healing the body and the soul. I mean, why wouldn't God take away his thorn in the flesh? Because that thorn in the flesh became a sense of power and a place of power for him. Folk, our hope is deferred because we realize that our dreams probably aren't going to ever come true, some of them. Think about that. There's people out there that really want to get married, but they're not going to. There's maybe some of you here this morning that have a great desire to marry again. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. There's a lot of us here today, we're praying about, you know, our health and our body and our strength. I mean, here I'll be 59 years old here this week, my birthday, and I'm thinking, you know, it's just like I can't get over this sickness. You see, you know, you just think about that. You know, there's things, you know, that we go through and sicknesses come our way, and we say, "God, take this away from me. God, don't allow this to touch me." But yet, many times it does. And our heart gets sick about it. And allow that heart sickness to take you through this list and get you to the reality of life on earth is not heaven. Jesus said in Matthew 16:33, write it down and remember it, in this world you will have trouble. In this world, you will have trouble. I don't know of a single person who has had all of their dreams fulfilled. And I suspect that it probably wouldn't even be healthy if we did. But what do we do when those dreams are not fulfilled? There is something that softens us, something that enables us to admit that we are not all that we think we are, something humbling in a positive way about not having all of our dreams fulfilled. Consider these verses as we conclude. In this world you will have trouble. You know what else he says? But take heart. I have overcome the world. Proverbs 13:12, our text today. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. Notice that last part. But a dream fulfilled is a tree of life. We know that all things work together for good to those who love him. Joseph's heart was sick. He was a slave, and then he was a prisoner. Then one day he was summoned before Pharaoh, and his dreams began to be fulfilled in ways that he could never imagine. He became prime minister of Israel, or of Egypt, saved all of Egypt, saved his own families from starvation. He saw his brothers bow down before him, and he saw his father fall to his knees in gratitude to God that this treasured son was alive and not dead. Most often, God leaves us with a thorn in our flesh, an obstacle or two that we have to learn to trust him with. That God can be a good thing even when all things are not good. So folks, as we journey down this path, let's realize that and know that God is holding our hand even when our dreams are fulfilled and even when they're not. Let's pray. Father in heaven, God, I thank you for this beautiful day, wonderful morning. Lord, I was mindful today that the word tells us that the wind is an indication of your spirit, of your presence. God, as we feel this strong wind blowing across our land today, may we understand and know that you are here, that you are present. God, may we know that you're there with us, celebrating with us when our dreams are fulfilled. And that you're there to teach us and sustain us and help us through when our dreams are not. But either way, Lord, may you be glorified. May you be glorified by how we approach life and what we show to the world about our relationship with you. Father, may it be so in Jesus' holy name.